The Legal Corner Podcast Series. Welcome to today's episode of The Legal Corner, a podcast which covers a variety of legal issues to keep you informed. Hosted by attorney at law Colin Dinoon and communication specialist Leonardo Torres.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Legal Corner podcast series. I am your host, Colin Dinoon, attorney at law, and I'm joined by my co-host today, Mr. Leonardo Torres, who is our resident communication specialist. How are you, Leonardo? Welcome back.
Yes, it's been a little break, a lot of work and travel and stuff like that, but I'm happy to be back for another episode, man. It's good.
Yeah, I can speak for the audience when I say we really miss you. You know, we miss that dynamic that you bring to the show and that contribution, you know. We really missed you, so I'm happy that you're back on.
Trust me, the feeling is mutual. I missed you all as well. And Two episodes is enough. And I needed to be here for this,
definitely. For sure. Right? And to all our regular listeners, we say thank you for your continued support. You know, you guys keep us going. And if you are listening to this podcast for the first time, you may be wondering, what is the Legal Corner podcast? Well, the Legal Corner podcast series is a bi-monthly show originating in the Twin Island nation of Trinidad and Tobago and is aimed at providing you with insight into various aspects of the law. In today's episode, we'll be looking at business registration and company incorporation. Many persons today are considering venturing out on their own to establish their own business. While this is commendable, it is important to have the correct knowledge and to choose the right business structure for your needs. And joining us on the show today to provide some perspective on this topic is Mrs. Celise Haynes Romani. Celise is an attorney at law, an entrepreneur, and a motivational speaker. She has a dynamic approach to the provision of legal services in that she believes that persons should take a proactive approach to minimalizing legal and other risks in dealing with their business. She enjoys helping fellow entrepreneurs build strong, compliant, and successful businesses, which meshes well with her background as an attorney at law, practicing primarily in the fields of corporate and commercial law. She has held numerous roles in both private and public entities, during which she has amassed experience in different areas of law, including in the corporate, real property, construction, intellectual property, and oil and gas sectors. She lives for increasing her knowledge base, and she enjoys reading, researching, and putting knowledge into practice by finding solutions. At this time, she's focused on building her legacy as one of impact through transparent conversations that influence meaningful change. I like the song of that. Welcome to Legal Corner, Celise.
Thanks so much, Colin.
Celise, we're going to jump right into it because, you know, we are here to talk about business registration and the incorporation of companies and all these different things like that. So I want you to tell us, what is the purpose of business registration?
So registration of a business usually means that the company is formally accepted as a business entity with the state entity that deals with businesses, which is the Registrar General's Department. And business registration, depending on the nature of the business, could take a couple different forms. So for instance, traditionally, although they all fall under the umbrella of businesses and the terms are kind of used interchangeably, technically companies are incorporated, which is the terminology that brings them into life, versus a sole proprietorship or a one-man business, which is a business which is registered. But again, a lot of people just use the terms more or less interchangeably, and that's kind of how things go here locally.
Is it that all types of businesses need to be registered? So for example, if someone has a grass cutting, service, or if someone has a shop, do those type of businesses need to be registered?
So That's a very interesting question, and I'm glad that you brought that up. I've gotten that question quite a few times before on platforms like these and also from clients. So I've heard a lot of people say, if you're operating a business in Trinidad and Tobago, it needs to be registered. And I'm not quite sure that I agree with that. However, there is the Registration of Business Names Act, which provides that if you're doing a business in any other name other than your own name, then you have to have the name registered. And just with just as with either incorporating a company or registration of a business, they both do that first step. It's the same for both of them, which is getting the name approved, which would be the process that is followed under the Registration of Business Names Act, where, as I mentioned, the Registrar General's Department, they would look at the name. You would give them information as to what the business that you're hoping to start up entails, and they would look at the name itself. They examine it to make sure that it isn't the same as another business that is in operation, and also that it's appropriate for use in Trinidad and Tobago, that it's not offensive, for instance, and then they would give approval for the name. And after that process is done, then it follows other processes, depending on if it's a business, a sole proprietorship or partnership, for instance, or if it's a company. So I think it's a little bit of a gray area because, you know, small enterprises, they don't necessarily, I would say, have to be formalized. But at the same time, there are significant advantages of having a formal business. And I mean, we could go into some of those. And also on top of that, you, of course, have to comply with the law, which says that if you're operating a business in any other name other than your own true name, then the name should be registered in accordance with the Act.
Okay, excellent. Tell us a bit about those advantages that you're referencing in terms of registration of a business.
Yeah, sure. So for one, for instance, it's much easier to build business credit if you have a registered or incorporated business. If it's a company, you can have, and this is so strange because just this week I had this situation where I had somebody who I know who wanted a reference letter to go to the embassy, and she's self-employed. She has her own business and has for a couple of years, but she did not have a formal entity. She never registered a business. And she was going around asking people for a job letter because otherwise, how would she prove her ties to Trinidad and Tobago, prove her income, etc.? Because while she had this business, it was never a formal entity and the records were scanty. So to avoid a situation like that, there are controls in place. You can register your business, start it up formally, have it recognized, and then that means that you have this business that operates both in reality and in practice and also on paper for records purposes. That said, there are also different benefits to having different types of businesses. So for instance, if you have a company, for example, you have the protection of having your personal assets and money, whatever that is, anything that you own is ring-fenced and protected from anything that the company does. So what is known as a corporate veil is also a very, very significant advantage of having a company, which does not apply if you have a sole proprietorship, for instance, where your assets and the business's assets are in effect one and the same. There are also tax advantages. There are a number of things that you can write off if you have a registered business and get credits for, whereas if you were operating a business but it was a formal recognized business, you wouldn't be likely to be able to claim those benefits. And of course, as I was saying, you know, the records and the paper trail, building up a business brand can be quite significant. There's also just the legacy aspect of it too, I suppose, which again, there are significant advantages to having a company versus a sole proprietorship, because a company can exist in perpetuity. With a sole proprietorship, on the other hand, you and the business being one and the same, if something happens to you and, you know, you pass away, the business is also at an end. So it really does depend on the type of business, on the type of entity that you start up. But certainly, I would say in any case, having a formal and recognized business in itself, whatever that type and form of entity takes, is much more beneficial than just having an informal business. But I mean, with the pros come the cons too, because there are also I wouldn't say disadvantages per se, but there are requirements that you have to comply with when you have a formal business versus the parlor that that exists, but they don't really do much compliance work.
All right, thank you for that explanation. Now you were getting into a bit of the different structures and the types of registrations that, you know, businesses or owners rather, people who want to get into business can venture into. But can you just talk a little bit more about the different business structures and maybe even give us a little bit of a guide as to what are some of the pros and cons for those things, so that those who are interested in creating their own business, they can get that information so that they can know what is the best way forward for the type of business that they want to get into?
Yes, certainly. So as I was mentioning before, there are sole proprietorships, which more or less are a one-man show where you register a business name and you operate as the business name, but in your own personal capacity. Similarly, there are partnerships, which are a number of people operating in more or less the same way. They operate together as a business entity under a name, but them and the business are essentially one and the same. Then on the other hand, you can have a company, and there are different types of companies as well. So there are limited liability companies, which, as the name suggests, liability for what the business does is limited, i.e. it doesn't affect the individuals and their personal capacity who operate and run the business. There are also unlimited liability companies, but those are not at all very popular in Trinidad. There are just a few that I know of, and they're more or less family run and operated. And one of the main advantages of having those types of companies is that they're able to protect the records of the company, and they don't have to disclose as much information on it. But I usually advise clients, if their business is one that they want to take seriously, that they want to go down that road of legacy building, having a formal entity that they really want to seriously invest in, then a limited liability company, limited by shares, which means that your liability for the company's debts and whatever happens if the company has to be wound up is limited by the ownership structure, i.e. the amount of shares that you own. So I usually advise persons that if that's something that they want to do with a serious business, then that's the best way to go. Limited liability company.
Okay, so just a quick follow-up. As you would have talked about that limited liability, that liability that we are talking about, what does that mean for both the business owner as well as the customer? What does that limited liability really speak to?
So, for instance, if as a business owner, you own 100 shares at $1 each in the company, then your liability for anything that the company does is limited by that investment that you made that is reflected in the share ownership. So if the company has to be wound up, let's say you did something really bad, you breached a contract and somebody took you to court and they now get damages, that's the extent of your personal liability to satisfy that judgment. Of course, the company's assets would still be up in play, but your personal liability would be limited by your ownership. Yeah, so just to clarify, as I was saying, versus, and it really comes, the stark reality of it is really when it's contrasted with a sole proprietorship, for example. With a sole proprietorship, as I was saying, you and the business are one. So if you, in the same situation, are sued by an unhappy customer or supplier even, your personal assets as a sole proprietor, your house, your family home, your car, everything is up for grabs potentially, versus with a limited liability company, just as I was saying, whatever your personal liability is limited or confined to that investment that you've made in the company.
All right. Thank you very much for that.
Okay. At this point, we'll take a quick break and we'll be right back. Welcome back and thank you for staying with us. So, Liz, before the break, you were giving us some really nice information as it relates to how persons can protect their assets, if they are desirous of getting into business. And this would primarily be done through the avenue of a limited liability company. Are there any drawbacks associated with having a limited liability company?
There can be, but what I would say are the core responsibilities. I wouldn't really call them drawbacks per se, but there are just things that you have to do from a compliance and governance perspective to be a compliant business if you have a limited liability company. For instance, the basic ones are annual returns. I often have clients who have companies that they just set up and they would kind of shelve them for a bit. And they think that they don't have to file the annual returns or they don't have to do anything with the company. That's just not accurate. You still have to do your annual returns every single year, even if nothing has changed, even if nothing has happened with the company. Similarly with taxes, even though there's no income coming in, you still have to file declarations to say what has happened, even if it's nothing. Tax-wise with the company, for instance, with a limited liability company as well, you have to keep the state through the Registrar General's Department advised on changes that are made within the company. So, for instance, if you change the secretary, you have to file paperwork to let the state know within a short time too, within 30 days. And you just have to, any change that is made to the structure and the persons who hold key responsibilities on a company, you have to file the paperwork. There are significant penalties if they're not done in time. As you would probably already know, during the COVID period, there were long extensions for persons to be able to file their paperwork without paying those penalties. But now that we're, I suppose, getting out of the woods, you know, the tolerance is not as is not there as it might have been before. So, in addition, due to our, and when I say our, I mean Trinidad and Tobago's positioning in the global financial landscape, there was a lot of de-risking. So, for instance, we are now recently, a couple of years ago, the states would have passed some legislation to require that persons file beneficial ownership documents to say not only who the legal owners of the company would be, but who are also the beneficial owners if those are different persons. In many cases, they're exactly the same persons. But what the legislation was intended to achieve was that persons, especially high net worth individuals or persons involved in criminal activities, they would be sort of, I suppose, forced to give transparency on in situations where they would be the beneficiaries or the beneficial owners of shares in companies, but they would have a front person who on paper would be the owner of those companies. So in terms of how far along or how much we've been able to hit the target based on the requirements, I guess that's still a work in progress. And just as I was saying, you know, during the COVID period, there were lots of extensions and amnesties that had been going on. I don't believe I saw any statistics coming out from the Registrar General's Department on how many companies have submitted versus how many have these beneficial ownership returns outstanding, etc. But I'm guessing we'll be updated soon on all of that. And just as you were saying, you know, some people do see it as a significant drawback because it's just a lot of paperwork that has to be done and on a fairly regular basis.
Can you speak a bit about some of the factors to be considered when deciding whether one should incorporate a company?
Yes, certainly. So just as, and this segues really nicely from the last point. So just as I was saying, you know, there is a cost to keeping a company going. Apart from the cost of startup, there is a cost as to having all this paperwork done, whether that is persons planning to do it on their own. There still would be filing fees. Or if they're going to hire somebody else, like attorneys like ourselves, Colin, you and I, or other registration and company management specialists, there's going to be a cost to doing all of that, to keeping compliant. And, you know, what we talked about is just the most basic compliance requirements. Depending on the type of industry, there would be additional compliance requirements. So, for instance, Colin, you know, as attorneys who deal in special areas of the law, like real estate, for instance, if we have a business, we have to be FIU registered. And then there are also other businesses that have to be FIU registered and file paperwork, like persons who do motor vehicle sales, jewelers, real estate agents. So depending on the type of industry, there are other compliance requirements that go along with and on top of the basic ones that you have to complete. So what I would say is for persons who are considering starting up a company, you know, it's a good idea to sit down and plan where you see the business going. If it's something that, and I sometimes advise clients that, you know, it might be a good idea to start up and do a sole proprietorship. And then if you see it being successful, you can always convert. You can always keep the name and convert to a limited liability company when it's grown a bit and you can see that this is something that you really want to be dedicated to and you're ready to put the time and effort and energy and money into making that significant investment, I suppose.
Okay, excellent. As we get ready to wrap up, Celise, I would just like you to explain to us the process that is involved as it relates to incorporating a company.
I am actually not sure whether the manual process is still possible, which is going down with your forms and going down to a company's registry to do this. It was before COVID, of course, but I haven't done it the manual way in a very long time, so I'm not sure if that's still a possibility. But that said, right now, the incorporations are done online. So if you don't already have a TT Connect account, you would have to request one and send in your documents. I think you need to send in a form of ID and I believe a proof of address, a utility bill, and then you can set up your TT Connect account, which you can link to a TT BizLink account, which are both government platforms. And with TT BizLink, you can sign in. And the first thing you do for any type of business, just as I was saying earlier, is you get the name approval. So you can submit names for a company, for instance, you can submit 3 options in case the Registrar General's Department doesn't approve the first one or the second one. You have three options that you can choose to submit for approval. When one of those are approved, then for a company, you do the paperwork to indicate the required details on the articles of incorporation. For instance, the shareholding, whether what type of shares you would want the company to issue. Those could be ordinary shares. Those could be preferential shares that have special privileges. So all of those things would be done on the articles of incorporation, which could also be changed post-registration, but you just need to give the preliminary details when you're setting up the company. You also give details on the number of directors, for instance. And in Trinidad and Tobago, under our Companies Act, you do need a minimum of 2 directors. There are places, including some states in the US, where it's possible to have a 1-person company. But here, you need at least 2 people to be able to set up a company. So you do the articles of incorporation. You also do the notice of directors. So you would give details on who your directors are going to be starting up the company. And you also do a notice of address to give a registered address for the company. And once you do all of that, you submit the paperwork. You usually, so in terms of timeline for the companies that I've incorporated recently, the name approvals take a little while. At one point, it was done almost, I would say, like within 24 hours. Right now, it's more like 2 weeks. And once you get the name approval and you do the incorporation and you submit the preliminary paperwork, I would say we usually get a response within about 3 to 5 business days. So I would say from beginning to end, you can get the company incorporated in about 3 weeks, certainly within a month. And for a company as well, once you submit the initial paperwork and that is approved, you then have 30 days to nominate who's going to be the secretary, who's going to be the person that's more or less legally responsible and accountable for all the things that the company does or doesn't do compliance-wise. And it's very important to operate with a secretary. It is an offense for a company to not have a secretary and be in operation. So that's a further piece of the puzzle that's just very important to start off on a good and compliant footing. So once you do all of those things, you have a company. And then after that, there are a couple of things in the law that you have to do. For instance, under the Companies Act, this one isn't mandatory, but it recommends that you have an organizational meeting. And usually at that organizational meeting, the officers of the company, directors, secretary, etc., would kind of establish the rules and who takes responsibility for what aspects of the company's operations. At that time, you could also pass bylaws, which are guidelines for how the company operates. And after that as well, in the Companies Act, there are provisions for the other things that you have to do. So for instance, I mentioned the annual returns, beneficial ownership, for instance. One that a lot of people don't do is have annual general meetings for shareholders. So within the Companies Act, it does mandate that you have your first annual general meeting within 18 months of incorporation and every 12 months thereafter. So, I mean, the Companies Act is, I think, about 300 pages or 300 sections. It's huge. And I can probably guarantee that there aren't many companies here locally that comply with all of the provisions. It's a lot to digest and take in and do. But as I always recommend to persons, you know, just do as much as you can. Don't skim over the basics, certainly. And once you can show that you're trying to be compliant, you're certainly in a better off position than if you just don't take any of these things seriously at all.
All right. So before we go, what about like the fees that comes with
you know, incorporating a business or registering a business. Are you familiar with, is it that it's different for different types of businesses that it you is. Would want to get into? Can you just touch on that right before we go?
Sure. So a sole proprietorship, for instance, and these are just the fees that are paid to Registrar General's department, but for a sole proprietorship, the name search, I believe, is $20. And then thereafter, when the name is approved, you pay $220. For a company, I think the name search is $25 instead of $20. And thereafter, you pay $520 to incorporate and file the basic paperwork, which includes the notice of address and the notice of directors. And then, well, you pay another $40 to file the notice of secretary thereafter. So in all, $560.
Okay, so minimal cost. It's not too expensive to get into business.
No, it really isn't. It's not that much.
All right. So, Celise, unfortunately, we have really come to the end of the program. I must thank you for your wealth of knowledge. I mean, we touched on so many different things in terms of businesses, companies, and the different types of ways that a business owner or a potential business owner, prospective business owner, you know, could get into business. I think it's a topic that we really needed to have on the podcast, and we really were happy to have you today as our guest speaker. And I mean, the information was amazing. It was very informative, and we really, really want to thank you from all of us here at the Legal Corner for your time and your knowledge. And we really wish you the best in all of your future endeavors.
Thank you. And well, same to you, of course. You know, I hope the podcast listenership grows exponentially. And, you know, maybe in a year's time, we can have a chat again.
This has brought us to the end of another episode of the Legal Corner podcast series. Remember to check us out on social media. On Facebook, we are the Legal Corner podcast series. On Instagram, we are at the Legal Corner podcast. We are also on Patreon if you're interested in supporting our work. If you enjoyed the show, we'd like to ask you to share it with your friends and family members. Feel free to leave us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser. We'll also love it if you subscribe to our podcast so you won't miss any of our future episodes. Special thanks to the members of our promotional team who are helping us to get our message out. Bye for now, and God bless.
Thank you for listening to the Legal Corner podcast series. For more information, please visit us at our Facebook or Instagram pages, or send your comments to thelegalcornerpodcast@gmail.com. We look forward to hearing from you.